This meeting is now being recorded.
Thanks for joining the Immigration Policy Center's call on the northern border. We're going to start the call in just about a minute. We're letting people dial in, and we'll get started. Thank you. Hi, if you're just joining us, we're going to get started in just about a minute, so please hang tight. Thank you. Thanks for joining the Immigration Policy Center's call today on the Northern Border Report. I'd like to hand over the reins to Michelle Wasilin, Senior Policy Analyst at the Immigration Policy Center. Michelle?
Great. Thank you, Wendy, and thank you to everybody who got on this call. I am Michelle Wasilin of the Immigration Policy Center. For those of you who don't know us, the IPC is the research and policy arm of the American Immigration Council. The IPC tries to shape a rational conversation on immigration, and through our research and analysis, we provide policymakers, the media, and the general public with accurate, factual information about immigrants and immigration policy in the United States. Today we have a great call lined up for you, but first I want to go through a couple of housekeeping items. First of all of your lines are on mute right now. You will have an opportunity to unmute yourselves and ask questions later after our speakers have presented. And also we are recording this call, so please keep that in mind, and the recording will be available through the IPC later on. So today the IPC is releasing a new paper, which is entitled Border Patrol Agents as Interpreters Along the Northern Border, Unwise Policy, Illegal Practice. This paper is now available on our website, which is immigrationpolicy.org. So why did IPC do this paper? IPC decided to do this paper because we felt that too little attention is being paid to the northern border. And this northern border has experienced significant increases in the number of Border Patrol agents. Along with an increase in enforcement resources, advocates along the northern border have also reported a lot of troubling behavior, including the fact that Border Patrol agents are being called by local police officers to interpret for them with non-English-speaking persons. In other cases, Border Patrol agents are allegedly answering 911 emergency calls when the caller doesn't speak English. In other cases, Border Patrol agents appear to be doing ride-alongs with local police, and we've even heard that they are showing up at crime scenes or even traffic stops. Rather than simply interpreting, the Border Patrol agents have used these occasions to enforce immigration law, detaining and deporting individuals that they identify through this pretext of interpreting. Consistent with collaborative efforts between local police and federal immigration agents like the 287G program, the Secure Communities program, this collaboration between the local police and Border Patrol terrifies local immigrant communities, and they're now fearful of calling the police or fearful of calling an ambulance or the fire department, and this fear has significant implications for public health and safety. So IPC wanted to know what's really going on here. How exactly is this collaboration between local police and the Border Patrol occurring? Why is the Border Patrol being used as interpreters? Do they even speak Spanish, and are they even trained to interpret? Don't the police have other resources that can provide interpretation services? And how does providing interpretation services fit within the mission and priorities of the Border Patrol? And finally, is this even legal? So our wonderful author, Lisa Graybill, has written this fantastic paper that looks at each of these issues and provides multiple case studies to truly give you a sense of what's happening along the northern border. Could who's ever typing please put your phone on mute? You can use star 6 or your mute button to put us on mute. Thank you. So Lisa is going to give you a really good sense of what's happening along the northern border. She also delves into the legal issues at play here. So in other words, when does providing meaningful access to services in one's own language cross the line and actually become discrimination? So now I will introduce our speakers, and then they will give their presentations. So our first speaker will be the author, Lisa Grayville. Lisa served as the legal director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Texas from 2005 to 2012. Before joining the ACLU of Texas, Lisa was a trial attorney in the Attorney General's Honors Program at the Special Litigation Section of the U.S. Department of Justice Civil Rights Division. And there she worked on police misconduct and prison and jail conditions. Lisa is a native Texan. After Lisa, we will have Ryan Bates, and Ryan speaks to us from the perspective of someone who lives and works on the northern border. Ryan is the founding director of the Alliance for Immigrants' Rights and Reform, Michigan, and the executive director of the Michigan Organizing Project. There in Michigan, he leads this coalition of 60 labor, faith, social service, business, student, and community organizations as they work together to defend the civil rights of immigrant workers, families, and students, and ensure access to dignified housing for all and support low-wage workers. Finally, our third speaker will be Melissa Crow. Melissa is the director of the American Immigration Council's Legal Action Center, the LAC, and Melissa has spearheaded the LAC's work on border issues. So she is going to tell you about the work that LAC is doing in conjunction with our partners along the northern border. So the three of them will give short presentations. After that, we will open up the lines for Q&A. And before I hand it over to Lisa, I just want to remind you that this new paper is available on our website, immigrationpolicy.org. So Lisa, take it away.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Michelle. And thanks to the IPC for the opportunity to work on this engaging and important project. To prepare this report, I began by researching the northern border, which stretches from Washington State in the far northwest all the way to Maine in the northeast and encompasses eight different U.S. border patrol sectors. I researched the post-9/11 changes at the northern border, which include, as Michelle mentioned, a drastic increase in both funding and staffing. Specifically, there's been a 558% increase in funding for northern border law enforcement in the form of U.S. Border Patrol since 2001. The number of U.S. Border Patrol agents along the northern border has gone from 340 in fiscal year 2001 to 2,237 in fiscal year 2011. The stated priorities of the U.S. Border Patrol along the northern border are to combat terrorism and monitor the flow of trade and people back and forth across the border. But a number of the folks I spoke to in the course of researching this report expressed concern that possibly in the absence of enforcement work to do, U.S. Border Patrol agents were increasingly engaging in local law enforcement activities, which is problematic for a number of reasons. The methodology for this report included interviews with people across each of the northern border sectors, including attorneys, immigrants who've been directly affected by these practices, and advocates. I also researched news stories and reviewed complaints and court documents. And what I found was that while the experiences vary from east to west across the northern border, there are some commonalities in the practices that are being reported. And there is an extreme concern among advocates and immigrants about the impact of the Border Patrol serving as translators in municipal enforcement matters. Those concerns I would characterize in two categories. First, it's unwise policy. Unwise because individuals who are experiencing crime, violent acts, domestic violence, for example, are going to be less likely to contact local police if they know that such a phone call could result in immigration enforcement. So the public trust is eroded in local police. In fact, for this very reason, the Major City Police Chiefs Association has come out in opposition to having local police engage in immigration enforcement. The effect is the same if local police contact immigration enforcement ostensibly for the purpose of translating, and will discourage individuals who need police assistance from contacting those resources when they need it. It's also a poor use of U.S. Border Patrol resources and personnel when language lines and other resources exist that can accomplish the same goal of providing translation to individuals who are involved in a traffic stop or who need emergency services. And finally, there's a significant danger to the public health and welfare that can result through unreported crimes, through fear of contacting local law enforcement, and through evasion when border enforcement is on the scene. We'll talk more about that in a moment. It's also illegal. Title VI specifically requires, which is part of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, specifically requires recipients of federal funding, like state and local police departments, to provide meaningful access to limited English proficient people or people who speak limited or no English. Title VI requires both the federal agencies and to recipients of federal funding, which includes just about every municipal, state, and local police department in the country. At least one federal agency reviewing its employees' use of U.S. Border Patrol agents as translators found the practice did in fact constitute discrimination in violation of Title VI. Discriminatory behavior can result in the removal of federal funding from the recipient agency. In the case of border patrol activity in Washington State, it was an action of the United States Forest Department reviewed by the Department of Agriculture. It concluded that those federal agents, by contacting U.S. Border Patrol to serve as translators in a forestry situation, did discriminate in violation of Title VI and required that federal agency to promulgate new rules and accept responsibility for discriminatory practices. So in sum, what I learned from the 20 to 30 interviews that I conducted in the course of doing this report is that the current practice of U.S. Border Patrol responding to or volunteering to serve as translators in the course of local law enforcement is both endangers public health and welfare and also constitutes potential violation of the law.
Great. Thank you so much for that overview, Lisa. I think people are saying, this is crazy. How are Border Patrol agents being used as interpreters or translators? So, Ryan, could you please shed a little light on that and explain to us what's happening in these communities? What are the Border Patrol doing?
Sure. Thanks so much, Michelle. And thank you to Lisa for taking the time to shine a light on this really important problem that's plaguing border communities in the northern part of the country. In our role at the Michigan Organizing Project and the Alliance for Immigrants' Rights, we've been working with a great group of advocates all across the country through the Northern Borders Coalition to really try and get a handle on what's happening on the ground in the states in immigrant communities. And what we're seeing is a shocking level of collaboration between local police and Customs and Border Protection, as well as sometimes violence and excessive use of force, even resulting in the death of immigrants. This agency needs to get a stronger handle on basic civil rights practices, and a great place to start is with interpretation and translation. I'll give two quick examples of how a close relationship between Border Patrol and local law enforcement can really create the situations where our resources are being used poorly and communities are under attack. The most powerful example is the case coming out of Washington State. A Mexican family called 911 to report a health problem at the house. And rather than getting the local 911 dispatcher, the local sheriff's department, it turned out that it was Border Patrol answering the call. When instead of first responders appearing at the home, Border Patrol agents arrived, the family was confused, not understanding what was going on. And the son, Alex Martinez, exited the home to find out what was going on in his yard. Alex was actually shot multiple times by Border Patrol on the steps of his own home due to a language and interpretation issue with 911. This sort of enforcement doesn't make anyone safe, especially not the immigrants who are trying to reach out to first response and to law enforcement for basic public safety needs. Another recent example, just this year, my home state of Michigan, a group of farm workers were working in Huron County, about 100 miles north of Detroit. And the farm workers had a dispute with their employer, and they called 911. Instead of getting help with this problem, Border Patrol arrived at the request of the sheriff to translate for these farm workers, who were subsequently and immediately put into removal proceedings. Now, this is a case where the farm workers should have had access to advocates to help with a labor dispute or a human rights issue at the workplace. But instead, local employers, local law enforcement acted to put those farm workers into proceedings before anyone was able to assess what was going wrong at that workplace. This sort of close collaboration really breaks down the trust that we need between immigrant communities and law enforcement to keep everybody safe. If folks don't feel that when they call 911, when they call the police, that they're going to get protection, that they'll get public safety, they're not going to call at all. And that makes all of us less safe. And I think of one shocking example here in Detroit where there was a 2 years ago a group of Guatemalan laborers who were killed. Two of the laborers were killed in an alley, and the survivor was too afraid of the immigration consequences to call the police and report the crime. Even though there might have been some level of protection for him, had he been able to reach law enforcement, and due to, in large part, the fear that his community was experiencing, murderers are still on the streets of Detroit when they should be in the custody of law enforcement. So it's incredibly important that Customs and Border Protection take a strong line against the use of their resources for translation and interpretation, not only because it's a bad use of their resources when they're responding to traffic stops or going to local domestic disturbances, they're by definition not watching the border, but also because it breaks down that critical trust between immigrant communities and law enforcement that we all need to be safe for the long term.
Thanks so much, Ryan. That's very helpful. And there are lots of other examples in the paper, which again is available at immigrationpolicy.org. Now I'm going to turn it over to Melissa Crow from the Legal Action Center.
Thank you, Michelle. As Lisa Grable mentioned, the relevant legal framework is set forth in Title VI of the Civil Rights Act and also a related executive order that was signed by President Clinton, which requires federal agencies to ensure meaningful access to their services and to those services that are provided by recipients of federal funding. And I just want to elaborate very briefly on the rationale for the U.S. Department of Agriculture's finding that the Forest Service had discriminated against Latinos by using Border Patrol agents to provide Spanish interpretation assistance. The decision essentially said that the increased threat of immigration enforcement posed by the use of Border Patrol agents as interpreters discriminated against Spanish speakers and those who were perceived to be Spanish speakers by discouraging them from using the services of the Forest Service and by causing harm and humiliation. So in other words, in order to access services of the Forest Service, certain individuals were required to endure an added burden of being subjected to questions about their immigration status that was not a factor for people who were fluent English speakers. And the same rationale, we would argue, would apply to instances where Border Patrol translates for local law enforcement or for other sorts of federal agencies or agencies that receive federal funding. I'm going to segue for a moment to some other work that the Legal Action Center has done on this issue, which was around the same time that the U.S. Department of Agriculture issued the decision that I just mentioned. Together with an alliance of northern border organizations, the Legal Action Center filed Freedom of Information Act requests to get additional information on Border Patrol's interpretation and 911 activities. We've received several records to date. We're hoping for many, many more. But those that we've received and analyzed reveal that DHS has been aware of these practices since at least June of 2011. And they shed more light on the frequency with which these practices trigger immigration enforcement activities. Specifically, there are detailed summaries in the documents of incidents that took place not only in the places that you just heard about, but also in Montana, California, and Louisiana. All of these accounts were taken from public news reports and reports by non-governmental organizations and compiled in various sorts of DHS internal documents. In several of the cases, Border Patrol agents were ostensibly contacted to provide interpretation assistance for other law enforcement agencies, but when they arrived on the scene, they started asking their own questions about individuals' immigration status outside of the context of any sort of translation or interpretation. The documents also include an internal memo dated July of 2011 from Margot Schlanger, who is the former DHS Officer for Civil Rights and Civil Liberties, to the Deputy Chief of Border Patrol. And the memo notes, and I quote, that some of the people placed in removal proceedings in these cases were domestic violence victims who had called the police for help or people who were cooperating with the police in the search for fugitives. That's the end of the quote. The memo further acknowledges that Border Patrol's role and interpretation could undermine community policing, as we've discussed, and emphasizes the pressing need for written guidance, which during a meeting between the Office of Civil Rights and Civil Liberties and CBP, individuals from CBP supposedly agreed to draft. Unfortunately, we've seen nothing yet, although we're still hopeful. There are many more interesting facts contained in the documents, and you can find both of the FOIA requests we submitted as well as all of the records released so far on the Legal Action Center's website at www.legalactioncenter.org. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much, Melissa, and thank you to all of our speakers. Now we would like to open this up for a Q&A. If you want to ask a question, you can unmute your line by dialing *6. And please ask your question and also identify yourself. So do we have a first question for any of our speakers?
Remember to hit the *6 to unmute your line if you have a question for any of the speakers.
Hi, this is Juliana.
Hi, go on.
Yeah, I just would like to know for any of the speakers that just gave us the information, if they have identified any cases here in Texas. I'm with El Diario newspaper in El Paso, Texas, so I know this situation has been presented here in this part of the nation.
Thanks for that question. You know, this paper really focused on the northern border, and all of the research and examples are from the northern border. But Lisa, do you, being from Texas, having worked in Texas, do you have any indication of this being done there as well?
Absolutely. As Michelle said, this paper does focus specifically on northern border states. But I do know from my 7 years of experience working in Texas that these same kinds of complaints are reported along the southern border as well. There are some differences in the northern and southern border, but unfortunately, I think this is one commonality.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Juliana. And if you could mute your line again with star six, we're getting a little bit of static there. Thank you. Okay, next question. Hit star six to unmute your line.
Hi, my name is Leslie. Can I ask a question?
Of course.
I'm Leslie Horry, and I'm live out in the community of Forks, Washington, and we have a community group, Forks Human Rights Group. And I just wanted to make a comment, ask a question about the Forest Service decision that came out of the community member that died in our community. So we were very aware of that. But the thing I think is that, you know, Border Patrol showing up, it was a simple permit check for the Forest Service products he was harvesting. And it's something, I mean, I think this is probably, no, but it's something that's been going on for 10 or 20 years, and it's always, we have less immigrant community members now, and it's always been taken care of successfully before Border Patrol was here. So, you know, something that we've been working a lot on, too, talk to the Border Patrol and the police and Forest Service and whatnot, because we have this problem with all the agencies in our community, is kind of getting a better idea. We don't ever get a straight answer who called who first, or it's very difficult, and I don't know if any of those records requests that are coming back show kind of who initiated and if there's ever any discrepancies in the reports.
That's a great question. Thank you. Lisa, do you want to take that one?
I'd be happy to address it, although I know that Melissa may have some thoughts to add. But when you're trying to, can I understand your question? Please clarify if I'm answering a different question than the one you asked.
Okay.
But my understanding is that if you want to try to figure out how the initial contact was made, there are really two sources of information, and you have to speak both and then compare to have some degree of certainty that you're getting an accurate answer. What you need are both the law enforcement records of the law enforcement entity and whatever federal records there are. For example, I think it's an I-213 that Border Patrol will complete when they take someone into custody. So if you can, and this happened in a number of the cases I looked at, that the USBP reports would not include any details about how the USBP arrived on the scene, but the local law enforcement report of the incident would say, called Border Patrol for language assistance. And vice versa, the converse is also true. Sometimes the local law enforcement will not report it, but the federal documents will. In one of the incidents that's been reported by the Northwest Immigrants' Rights Project, and I believe one that was also reported, the dialogue between the Washington State Enforcement Officer and the Border Patrol on the scene went something like, the border, and this is recounted in the report, basically, and this happened in Washington State, in your home state, but it basically went along the lines of Border Patrol saying, you know, we're always happy to help, and the local law enforcement agent saying, yeah, I know, we just, you know, we have to ask you in kind of a roundabout way, wink, wink, nod, nod. So I think that the best way to get clarification on that, when you're looking at incidents that happened in the past, is to request both the local law enforcement report of the incident and whatever documents are generated by Border Patrol.
Thank you.
And this is Melissa. I agree with everything that Lisa said, and I would just add that in the documents we got through the FOIA request, there are references to a couple of different incidents where the I-213, which is the DHS record, and the record from the local law enforcement agency have different accounts of what happened.
Thanks, Melissa.
This is Isabel Framer. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. I'm with Language Access Consultants, and this is my area of expertise. I'm a certified judiciary interpreter, and I've worked on LEP since 1997. I was the first to file a complaint on against law enforcement for the use of incompetent interpreter services. It wasn't the first to settle, but it was the first complaint that that resulted in a settlement with Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office and Lake Worth Police Department in Florida. So my question to you is, and I agree totally with everything that I'm hearing. I haven't read the report yet, and I know that there's the issues of trust, for the community to have trust on local law enforcement. There are neutrality issues. The competency issues that not only revolve around, the officer being fluent in the language, but also having interpreting skills. My question to you is, has anybody filed complaints against the local law enforcement? And the reason I ask that is because, you know, like I said, I worked on this issue for a long time, and we've been very successful, and at LEP.gov, they have, and I'm sure you know that, a planning tool for law enforcement, and then there's also, a list of all the complaints that have been filed and settlements between law enforcement. So I'm just wondering if you've, been in communication with the DOJ Federal Compliance Section.
Thanks for that question, Isabel. Lisa, do you want to take that one?
Sure. I think that was a multi-part question, so I'll do my best to hit each of the pieces, but trust that you'll let me know if I miss something. In terms of reporting to local law enforcement agencies, one of the examples that is discussed in the report occurred when the ACLU of Michigan wrote a letter to the Michigan State Patrol requesting that they commence an investigation of an incident that's described in greater detail in the report, but basically involved a traffic stop in which a Michigan State Patrol officer called the U.S. Border Patrol to translate and ultimately ended up towing the work car of a person who turned out to be a U.S. citizen. And it was all about this translation issue. So I would suggest that you check that story out. It's described a little bit more in the report. And the documents, the letter of complaint that the ACLU of Michigan wrote is cited in the report and available online. In terms of reaching out to the U.S. Department of Justice, that is one of the recommendations in this report that the individuals and advocates who encounter these situations do file complaints both with the local law enforcement entity and with U.S. DOJ and the Federal Compliance and Coordination Section. Some groups have already done so. The most recent example I can think of is from the Northwest Immigrants' Rights Project. They filed a complaint in May of just this year, May 2012, describing six different incidents where multiple municipal law enforcement entities, both sheriff's departments and the local police department, as well as the state patrol, had all engaged U.S. Border Patrol in translation, and they requested an investigation. They filed a complaint requesting an investigation. So I think that those resources are important to create a record and to try to increase the scrutiny on this issue.
This is Melissa. I would just add that I do know that the Office of Compliance is well aware of this issue and also very interested in it and committed to trying to do something about it. We do intend to send them our report, and I hope to meet with them in the coming weeks. I would also just note that the USDA decision that we spoke about earlier specifically noted that in many cases, interpretation services provided by Border Patrol don't satisfy applicable ethical standards because they're neither impartial or confidential. And they don't, Border Patrol agents don't have a habit of advising individuals of potential conflicts of interest or risks. So that was addressed in that particular context. And I think those are all valid concerns.
Thanks, Melissa. You know, I want to throw a question out for perhaps Ryan or Lisa. I guess it's a real basic question, but why are the police calling on the Border Patrol to translate or interpret in the first place? Are there other resources for interpretation that they could and should be using, or is this simply a pretext to get the Border Patrol there to take immigration enforcement action?
I think it depends department by department. In the city of Detroit, several years ago, advocates were successful in getting the city council to pass a resolution banning the local police from asking about immigration status or calling in the Border Patrol to act as translators. And the police have been creative. Sometimes they have used commercial services, you know, dial a translator. They've had to hire more bilingual police officers, which has frankly been a good thing for the department. Volunteers have stepped forward to help translate at local police precincts. So it's certainly within the power of local police departments to take care of this stuff. And it's certainly not an acceptable excuse to cite budget concerns. If we can do it in Detroit, it can be done anywhere.
This is Lisa. I would just add to that that I think the concerns operate both as to the local law enforcement officers reaching out to Border Patrol, but also there's good evidence that Border Patrol is sometimes responding on its own initiative. Advocates told me that they believe that Border Patrol monitors the local police radio frequencies and show up sometimes even uninvited, ostensibly to offer interpretation services. But there's a concern, and some of the local law enforcement officers that are quoted in the report talked about their own concern that sometimes Border Patrol arrives at the scene of what is essentially a domestic matter before local law enforcement is even able to engage. So I think it's a two-way street. I do not think it's simply a question of local law enforcement reaching out to Border Patrol. I do think that Border Patrol, possibly because they're not focused on or there isn't enough other enforcement work for them to do along the border, basically to justify their numbers and the budget expense of the huge expansion that's happened staffing-wise on the northern border, are taking their own initiative here and sort of shopping for business, for want of a better word, and using translation as a pretext to do so.
Thank you. That's very helpful. That clarified a lot for me. Are there other questions from any of the listeners?
I have a question.
And this is?
This is Ian Gordon from Mother Jones. You know, this again, this question could be answered, I guess, by anyone. You know, what has the response been from the Border Patrol, you know, to these complaints, to complaints, you know, by advocacy groups and to the various reports that have come out? You know, and to what extent is this still going on right now?
Ryan, do you want to take that?
Well, you'll have to ask Border Patrol for their latest response. But in the past, when we've raised these concerns, it's ranged from flat denial to, you know, we'll do what local law enforcement requests of us. We'll never turn down a fellow officer requesting our aid. To, you know, lots of excuses. The first thing we need Border Patrol to do is to take responsibility, to own up that this is a major problem and that it's within their power and an obligation to do something about it. And the other point I'll make is that, you know, the Obama administration has made some strides recently. Deferred action for childhood arrivals, the Dream Relief Program, showed a real willingness on the part of the administration to listen to the community and to respond to real need out there. And it shows that some departments, USCIS in particular, are able to implement directives and move in a positive direction. Border Patrol and CBP more broadly has been either unable or unwilling to address these problems. So it's a question for the Secretary Napolitano, who's really in control of this agency. Who is it? The agents themselves who are in the field making decisions on their own, or is it the administration who has the ability to make sure that important pieces of our civil rights protections, like Title VI, are actually being implemented?
This is Lisa. I would just add to that that I think the U.S. Department of Agriculture Office of Civil Rights decision on the action, on the question of whether or not the Forest Department violated Title VI in calling Border Patrol to translate for the incident we described in Washington, was an important first step in terms of being a wake-up call to other agencies in the federal government and to Border Patrol specifically, that these practices can be violations of the law, and specifically Title VI and Executive Order 13666. So I think that there can be no argument now that Border Patrol is squarely on notice and the federal government is squarely on notice about the concern that community members have expressed and about the legal violations that, that this conduct can lead to. So I certainly hope that, that as a result of that decision, which came out in May of this year, that some real hard thinking is going on in the federal government about how policies and practices can be changed.
Thanks, Lisa. Thanks, Ryan. Are there any other questions? Any other questions? Are there any points that our speakers would like to make briefly that you haven't made so far? Okay. Well, thank you again, everybody, for joining this call. I think this has been really great. The paper is fantastic. It's up on the website, immigrationpolicy.org. If you have any additional questions or want to contact one of our speakers, you could contact Wendy Stefsaff, who is the communications director at the council. Her number is 202-507-7524. So thank you again for joining us. Thanks to all of our speakers.